I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver. This is thecommentary.ca. Christopher Shulgin joins me again. He was last on a couple of years ago for his book on the Soviet diplomat Alexander Yakovlev, the Soviet ambassador, which was a critical hit and a nominee for BC's National Award for Canadian Nonfiction. He's on now to discuss a very different book, a personal memoir, Super Dad, a memoir of rebellion, drugs, and fatherhood. It's an engrossing, captivating book about his own life, which involves, as the subtitle says, fatherhood and drugs. Crack is the most prominent of drugs, and its role in Mr. Shulgin's life in this book makes for compelling reading. Christopher Shulgin is a critically acclaimed writer, having won a National Magazine Award as well. His website is shulgin.com. Please, Super Dad is published by Key Porter. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in Toronto, Chris Shulgin. Good morning, Mr. Shulgin.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So I heard about this book, I guess, like a lot of people, seeing it blurbed in the Globe and Mail one weekend over the summer.
Yes.
Yeah. Then in recent weeks, I'd seen some articles on it online. And because I'd had you before, I knew I wanted to have you on for this book. Now, your publisher, around the time that the book is released, undergoes some major changes. And so I didn't know if they were in business or who to email there. So I went out and bought the book a few days ago. And I'm probably the only person who will interview you who paid for their own copy. But I mean, Jesus, it's just a wonderfully written book. I mean, the content aside, I mean, you're a pretty good writer.
Thank you. But, you know, I think this interview is interesting because the books go to very different target markets, and you're going to be one of the few people, I think, who will have read both of them who are interviewing me. I think that's interesting. I think the difference between the books is interesting. But thanks for the introduction, and thanks for the kind words about the book too. I'm proud of it. I'm not proud of what I get up to in it, but I'm proud of it as a book.
Yeah, it is a piece of writing. I mean, as I said in the intro, it's compelling. While reading it, I thought to myself that you needed to write this, and you did so regardless of whatever cost to you personally or to your family to do it. Is that a correct assumption?
It is. I almost started writing it unwillingly. It was the summer after the Soviet ambassador launched that I first started writing out the book, eventually become this book. And I started writing and this is what came out. It was very much almost an unwilling process. It's interesting.
I don't know anything about drugs. I don't know anything about recovery. Is this book, you writing it, is this part of the recovery?
Absolutely. This was me exploring what the heck was going on in my head. I mean, I was acting in a way, to kind of go back, basically the book is, I had this pre-existing drug problem that blew up worse than it ever did when my wife became pregnant, and we during the first 18 months of my son's life, and it's about me coming to realize that I have to quit drugs and have to quit drinking, and then discovering that I can't, that I keep going back to this stuff, and then it's me kind of reverse engineering why I'm going back to it and why this stuff is a problem for me. And the memoir, writing the memoir, was me doing the reverse engineering. It was me putting this stuff in a chronology, putting stuff that I had always avoided thinking about. You know, I've always been a heavy drinker, and I'd never before examined it because what I tried to do is compartmentalize that drinking, and I'd never taken myself seriously enough to ever really look at why this was a problem. Although, you know, it was clear that I had problems with alcohol since I was 19 years old. Since I first started drinking. But so this memoir is the first time that I ever really sat down and started looking at what was going on in my head, what was attracting me to this stuff, and there are a lot of epiphanies in there.
So when you're doing the chronology, when you're looking back at your life, I find, as I said, I don't know anything about recovery, but I find it fascinating to read about whether it's a memoir like this or whether it's nonfiction. When you're looking at how your life evolved, how it all happened, do you, when you're talking to other people now, whether it's young people, do you preach abstinence? Did you say that at 19 you shouldn't have had anything to drink?
Oh heck, you know, I don't think I preach at all. I don't preach. I make a bad preacher. I'm ambivalent about this stuff. You know, I don't know whether there's anything prescriptive in this book at all. This is my stuff and my problems, and I don't know if anybody should, you know, this isn't me saying crack is bad and alcohol is bad and never do this stuff. You know, this is just me investigating my messed up relationship with substances of all kinds and trying to figure out and not only my messed up relationship with substances, but my messed up relationship with my conception of myself and my messed up society's messed up relationship with masculinity and my messed up relationship with fatherhood and the idea of fatherhood and the idea of, you know, devoting your life to taking care of somebody who requires care to being taken care of. Well, that's not grammatically correct, but do you know what I mean?
There's
nothing preaching about it.
Yeah. So then, do you say to say I'm a decade younger than you? So
yeah.
I can come to you in this interview and say, Chris, what's masculinity all about? What's being a man all about? Or I can also ask you, should I experiment?
So which one are you asking me right now?
Well, I'll ask you about the experimentation. I'm someone who's never smoked. I drink socially. I've never smoked pot. Never done any of the drugs that you describe in the book. Would you recommend, after knowing what you know and going what you've gone through, recommend experimentation?
Oh heck, you know, I mean, I think everybody has to figure out for themselves what's best for themselves. I mean, for me, I seem to have been not programmed. But I mean, my inclination is always to experience life to its fullest, and my inclination is always to, you know, to get out there and experience the stuff that I'm wondering about. And you know, drugs was a part of that. It sounds like a platitude, but you know, it's getting out there and experiencing stuff and exploring. And it burned me. How old was I? 9 years old. We were at a farm. My family was at a farm, and we were out with the kid who owned the farm, and he brought us to a cow fence. And we said, "Well, wow, that's really electrified. Why is it electrified? Oh, it's electrified to get rid of the cows. You know, to keep the cows away from it." Well, what happens if you touch it? And he said, well, you know, I don't know, but it's probably bad. You really don't want to do that. And I touched it, and it knocked me out. And that, I'd forgotten about that for a long time, but that, I don't know. I mean, I'm always touching cow fences. And one of these days, it was really going to mess up my life, and the cow fence that eventually did it was crack.
Now, something that you do a lot of in the book, not in the book, but when you're describing what happened in your life in the book, is lie. And I guess that's part and parcel of being the addict, right?
Yeah.
Is it something that the addict enjoys, the lying, or is it getting away with it that provides relief, say?
Oh, I don't think there's any enjoyment. You know, lying is a means to an end. at that point, I was lying because, you know, I'm not proud of that part. I mean, particularly as a writer who is supposed to be a truth teller, you know, I don't think it's a healthy... I mean, I never think it's healthy to lie. My relationship with my wife was founded on honesty, on being honest on all things. And that's one of the things that makes me feel most embarrassed and ashamed and... was that I was lying about this, you know, and I was lying about it to my wife, who was the person who I should have been most honest with. And no, there was no enjoyment. There was no enjoyment to that aspect of it at all. That was purely a means to an end, which was a means to continue this behavior and a means to procrastinate from putting this relationship or realization that I had to make that you know, I was a flawed human being, and my flaw was that I was an alcoholic and an addict, and I needed, you know, to do some profound changing in order to stop doing those things.
There's a part in the book where your wife had just found out she was pregnant.
Yep.
That's your first child, right?
Yes.
And you go back to crack, and yeah, and you're hiding it from her, and then you crawl into bed one night, and she sort of wakes up, and she says that she's had a bad dream.
Yep.
Did you ever talk to her about the dreams?
We did later. So the dreams that you're talking about, she would have these nightmares that I was smoking crack in.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these were profoundly disturbing dreams to both of us for different reasons. And in this period that you mentioned in the book, she starts having them at a period where I'm not supposed to be smoking crack. I mean, shit, I was never supposed to be smoking crack.
Right.
But at this point, I'm not supposed to be smoking crack. And overtly, you know, officially, I'm not. I've been clean at that point, officially, according to her, for 3 years, which is why she thought it was safe to have kids with me. I think kind of subconsciously that she realized that, I don't know, there were indicators to her. I mean, I was staying out late and lying about the reasons that I was staying out late, and that's why she started having these dreams. Did we talk about them? She talked about them to me, and I would kind of shrug them off, of course, because I didn't want to be talking about that at that point in time.
So now that the book's been published, what's the relationship like? I mean, she knew you were writing the book, right?
Yeah.
Not like your parents, yeah, who found out about it.
My parents knew. No. My parents knew that I was writing a book that I was uncomfortable with them reading. They just didn't know why I was uncomfortable with it. They had a lot of, they had a lot of curiosity and fear over. I mean, I think they thought that it was about adultery, which, I mean, in a way, it kind of is. But so they knew something was up. They just didn't know precisely what, and I was embarrassed to tell them. My wife, yeah, knew that I was reading or writing the book. She knew what it was about. She encouraged me to be as honest as possible. Even so, reading it, once she read it, was a tough thing for her. And you ask about the relationship. It's getting better. It's been tough. I don't know. You know, I mean, I've been saying, we've both been saying that, you know, ask us in 2 years. So we've kind of, we've given ourselves a lot of time to get through this, and I think we will get through it. We both love each other very much, and, I think these, you know, so long as I stay clean, I think it'll be a successful marriage.
Near the front of the book, you talk about being a dad. And you're at the back of a grocery store with your son. I'm just clear my throat for just a sec. You're at the back of a grocery store with your son, and you put him on top of a forklift. I guess he wanted to sit on top of a forklift.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the grocer comes out.
Yeah.
And he says, "You're a good dad." Now, I bring this up because Michael Chabon, the book that you're talking about, he was on this program talking about that, and I asked him about that part of the book. So I want to ask you about what you thought as well, whether you share the same thoughts as Chabon. So the grocer comes out, sees you playing with your kid on top of this forklift, and he says, "You're a good dad." You take exception to that.
Well, it makes me feel terrible about myself. So I think Chabon uses it as a departure to explore the differences between male and female parenting roles. You know, people aren't going up to mothers all the time and saying, "Oh, what a good mother you are." But they do that quite frequently to men. So Chabon uses that as a way to explore that.
See, what I thought. He meant, what I thought you meant, was that it's unfair to say that to a parent, whether it's a mother or a father, not knowing anything about them. And there's certainly backstory on Chabon, and there's certainly backstory on you, and that's why I thought you took exception to him saying you're being a good dad when, in fact, you're not.
Well, it's just, I mean, with me, it was very different. I wasn't being a good dad. I looked like I was being a good dad. And certainly I'm a loving father. I love my kids to death. And, that's maybe a bad, but you know, I really, I just have, it's apparent when you see me with them that I have a ton of affection for them. But at the same time I was betraying, at that point I only had one child, but I was betraying him. You know, I wasn't, doing all I could to be a role model for him. I wasn't being a good role model, and I wasn't being a good and secure provider for him. I was going out and doing this reckless behavior, and I knew it at that point, because that's my son at the time that happens. That's 18 months in, and into my son's life, and he was my best friend. And I knew that I was betraying him with this drug use, and I knew I was betraying my family with the drinking and the drugs and the partying. You know, I knew I had to stop partying. I just couldn't turn it off. And that's, you know, that's why when the grocer says, "Oh, you're such a good daddy," it just made me feel terrible, because I knew that I wasn't.
Does the addiction, does it influence the writing? I'm wondering if the writer that you are has, in some part, has come from the addiction.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. So what do you mean?
Like, do you think that if you hadn't gone through this, you wouldn't be the writer that you are today?
You know what? I think it's the opposite. I think going through this, I feel like this distracted me. I feel like drinking and drugs distracted me not even drinking and drugs. I feel like since I was about 19, since I really started drinking, I got distracted by something. I'm still trying to puzzle out what that is. It involves staying current. It involves finding out what's next, trying to stay on the forefront of culture. And then when I quit drinking, and as I wrote this memoir, I realized that's not real. What I really should be doing is just telling stories and writing honestly. And who cares about whether they're it's difficult to explain, and I still am not 100% sure what's going on. And maybe this is the source of other essays or other memoirs in future. But there's something about there was this epiphany that for the last 15 years I'd been externally directed, and in fact what I should be doing is being internally directed. And trying to find this stuff within myself. So I don't think the addiction helped the writing. I think it hurt the writing. And through early in high school, I didn't drink. And had I stuck on that path, I would have been a lot more productive, and would have, you know, say five books out as opposed to two.
Now, who is the book for? I know that, I mean, it reads like it's for you, but I mean, now that it's published, now that it's out there, who do you want to read it?
You know what? Writing this book was a completely selfish act, and, you know, maybe I shouldn't say this, but no, I'm going to say this. I don't care whether anybody reads it, frankly. I wrote the thing, and it helped me realize that I needed to quit drinking. I mean, the blindingly obvious thing through it is that I need to quit drinking, that I'm not just having problems with drugs, I'm having problems with alcohol, too, and that, you know, I have to become, you know, totally sober in order to kind of become the father and become the kind of man that I want to be. But you know, I mean, I think they're marketing it to marketing it to both men and women. I think this book really could I'm hearing a lot from women who are reading it and understanding their husbands a lot more. And you know, that's great. I mean, that feels nice. It really tempers the kind of embarrassment that making a public disclosure like this entails.
And if it sells well, you could save Key Porter, right?
Well, it is selling well.
Yeah.
So that's that's nice. That's just kind of that's what, icing on the cake.
Yeah.
I would never. You know, there's what a cliche that is.
Yeah. Now your kids are young, so I'm assuming they don't know really what's going on right now in terms of the book.
They know that I wrote a book about the mistakes that I made early on as a dad, and that's, you know, they know that there's this book in the house that that dad wrote, and. I'm not going to keep it a secret from them. They're going to know, because they're going to have to know about it throughout their lives.
So, they're still very young, though. So
they're 4 and 2.
You probably have about, what, 10, 12 years before?
I think, 10 years. Let's say my son is kind of precocious and intelligent, and, you know, I could see it 11 or 12. I don't know. You know, when did you read your first adult book?
Probably about 12.
I think it was, strangely, it was Ken Follett. For me, it was Ken Follett's On the Wings of Eagles, I think it was. It was a weird book to read. But I think I read that when I was around 11. So, you know, I mean, but I do have some time, is your point. So, yes.
Yeah. So this interview, you know, because the internet is what it is, it'll be up forever, probably.
Sure.
They could come across it. In the future, what will you have said to them already about all of this? What do you want to say?
You know, my best declaration to them is going to be process oriented, where it's the way I am with them every day. This, you know, realizing what I got up to and the terrible things that I did early on in my son's life will be tempered, hopefully, by the fact that they have a great relationship with me, and that we have this this unconditional love between us they're going to know, and they're going to know that I changed. So that's what I want them to know, is that I changed, and that I'm ashamed of that behavior.
One reviewer said that you're seeking redemption through the process of being a writer. What did you make of that?
That's interesting. I don't know if I'm ever going to be redeemed. You know, I'm always going to be damaged by betraying my wife and betraying the people who I loved don't know if you can ever redeem yourself of that. If this is going to be something that I'm redeeming myself, I'm going to be trying to redeem myself from for years and years, for the rest of my life. So, that's one way. That's one way that I'm trying to redeem myself. But another way is just through my conduct, through the example that I set my family.
You're a good writer, Shulgin, and I appreciate your time today.
Well, thanks for your interest, Joe. And you always ask, I really enjoyed our first interview for the Soviet ambassador, and I enjoyed this one.
The same. The book is called Super Dad, A Memoir of Rebellion, Drugs, and Fatherhood. It's published by Key Porter. Its author, Chris Shulgin, on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.